Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. So today I'm going to be reviewing a book which is actually, just a quick note, I do have a bit of a sore throat and a bit of a cold at the moment, so sorry if there's a bit of coughing and sniffling through this episode. But anyway, let's get on with this. Today I'm going to be reviewing a book which I listened to as an audiobook, and it is called, I'm just looking it up here, Who Fears Death by Nnedi Okorafor. This book actually came out in 2010 and won a few awards, but I didn't really know anything about it going into it, except that on the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads.com, which everyone should join, there's a thread there called What I Would Like to See Reviewed, where people can chime in on books that they'd like to see or listen to me review, that's probably the best way to get a book that you want reviewed on the podcast, because if other people chime in and say, oh yes, I really like that book too, oh yes, I think Luke should review that book too, I will probably get to it a lot quicker than if you just send me an email or just send me a Goodreads book recommendation or message or anything like that. So it wasn't actually this book that was recommended. It was another book which was recommended called The Book of the Phoenix by Nnedi Okorafor. And I looked that up and it seemed like it was a second book in a series. And it was kind of like a prequel or something like that. But it seemed to be, you know, even though it's published just last year, it was a follow-up book, even if it's set, you know, chronologically earlier. But whatever, I thought, well, I'll just go back and check out the first book in the series. And I went back of it and I was like, oh, I recognize this cover. And then I realized, and you know, just it's very easy to do it in Goodreads, because right there at the top of the page, you know, it says hardcover, 386 pages, published June 1st, 2010. But also you just go Literary Awards, a Nebula Award nominee for Best Novel. But the one that I noticed was that it was the World Fantasy Award for Best Novel in 2011. So this is an award-winning book. And I was like, right, I've heard of this book before, I'll just get on and read it, and then I'll get on to the actual recommended book later, the Book of the Phoenix. So, yeah, this is Who Fears Death, and it's a book which, as I started reading, I really don't ever want to read the blurbs of books, because I really enjoy going to a lot of books not even knowing the genre. But of course the front cover has a woman with some wings, so I'm thinking, oh, okay, this is fantasy, and it starts off kind of fantasy, but then really very early on I was like, oh, it's not just pure fantasy, it's actually like the way that I would categorize this book, or the categories I would throw it into, the genres I'd throw it into, is post-apocalyptic and fantasy, and you know, those are the two main ones. But it's our current world post-apocalypse, so there's computers, and it references things that have happened in the real world at some point. It goes back, oh, back in the original English, this word was this. I was like, okay, so it's definitely not a secondary world, it's definitely set in our world. And as it went along, actually, I realized there was a few different things. I was like, oh, there's some geography here, and there's some names here. It was felt very much like, oh, this is definitely sub-Saharan Africa. Wasn't quite exactly sure where, because I'm not really up to speed on a lot of the languages and the naming conventions and things. But later on they were saying, oh, and this town is called Sahara, and this was something like that. And there was not Darfur, but there was, you know, Darfur or something like that. And I was thinking, okay, so this is probably Sudan. And then right near the very end of the book, it is confirmed that, yes, this is the book set in kind of Sudan and that area of the middle of Africa, is central, northern, central, eastern kind of Africa. I'm not sure exactly how you would describe it on the map, but sort of that there's a specific region, and a lot of it is set in deserts, and then there's some other references, oh, there's some rivers over here and things like that. But what's interesting is that this is, because it's post-apocalyptic, not all technology is wiped out. So there are some kind of like Kindle reader kind of things, or iPad kind, you know, like it's definitely some tablets, and then later on there's some laptops and things. But also they have these water collectors, which are these, I guess these things that just, you know, they collect, it collects water out of the air. and which actually makes it quite refreshing in that it's a book about people living in the desert, but it's not always about, oh, we need water, oh, we need water. Everything's always about the water, because water just kind of keeps coming and things. And at some points I was like, wait a second, they're living in the desert and they, you know, and they're, you know, sometimes they're thirsty or starving, but then at other times they're like, oh yes, and I just went in and took a bath. And I was like, okay, they're in a desert, but the water's not there. But it does make for an interesting, like, post-apocalyptic, slightly Mad Max-like life, even though nobody's driving around in trucks, although there are some motorbikes at the start and some Mad Max gang-style action at some points. But, so, yeah, the post-apocalyptic set in the real world kind of setup of this book, I thought was interesting, because the level of technology, what made it through the apocalypse and who has survived. Yet at the same time, it starts off very strongly with, no, this is really a fantasy story too. It starts off and there's magic right away, and there's some kind of maybe alien people, or if they're not aliens, maybe they're just there's a very clear kind of like, okay, we're definitely going along kind of ethnic cleansing, genocide kind of stuff happening in this book, with kind of white people, but they're not white people, they're golden people, who are suppressing the black people in this post-apocalyptic world. But I was never quite sure exactly what was going on there, because it's like, because the people only know the history of the apocalypse through the lens of the histories written by the people in power, which I thought was very interesting in that, oh, like, these people, they came down from heaven and they landed here and now they're great, and but they're making everyone slaves, but, you know, they hold all the keys to the technology. And I was like, okay, are these really aliens, or are they, you know, genetic people, or are they just white people who have, you know, genetically modified themselves, or are they just white people who have written this story about how they are genetically superior? So I'm not sure if that's ever really explicitly said what is going on in that area, but it's like, it's murky enough that you're not quite sure. And later on in the book it gets even more murky, considering what this book is and where this story is being told, which I don't need to get into now, but I like the murkiness of this. But yeah, and then the magic starts coming, and very soon it becomes, right, this is definitely a world where magic is very powerful and is one of the defining aspects of the world. So, lots of different kind of magics, and of course a lot of the first half of the book, and all the way through the book, is very much coming to grips with what is the magic, like, what is possible, who can do what, who has the power, what different kinds of things. It's like in some ways it's like a kind of a typical, oh, young orphan learns how to become a wizard and then goes off and fights the bad guy, and along the way learns all the rules of the magic and becomes more powerful. That's kind of one of the overall arcs. But let me bring up my iPhone now, and I'm going to go through some of the notes and some of the characters that we have in this book. So it starts off, and we read a bit about a character. The main character is called Onisowo, which translates into English as "Who Fears Death." That is her name. And the reason why she has that name is because right near the start of the book, she goes, right, this is where I'm living now, and this is what my situation is, but let me go back and tell you about what happened to my mother before I was born. And the book kicks off with some pretty horrific mass raping story of people of this white tribe coming in, or white nation coming in, and very explicitly as an act of violence against the black community and the slaves, raping as many of the black women that they could find. And again, right away it's sort of like, yeah, this is definitely a tactic, but also it's like a magical tactic, because when the two races mix, or when the golden people and the black people, or the white people and the black people mix, the children who are born are called Awu, and they have like a different skin color again, and it's very clear that they are a result of rape. And when they go into different communities, they're either cast out, or it causes strife in the different communities. And it's an interesting way of setting up the book, but it is very heavy to start off in that way. And then we get what happens with Onisowo, our main character, as she learns about that and as she grows up as this outcast within the world. Like, there is nobody else like her. There's nobody else with her skin color, because where this happens, they go all the way to the east, like away from what's called the Seven Kingdoms. Oh, no, sorry, the Seven Rivers Kingdom, which is where the white people live. And all the black people are slaves, and they go east to where it's only black people and everyone is free, and it's a lot more civilized, or a lot more open and free and things like that. So we find of her, and then quite near the start of the book, it gets pretty heavy into female genital mutilation, and there's other parts where there's like incestuous child rape going on and things. And I was like, wow, this is pretty heavy going for the first start of the book. Thankfully, in some ways, it doesn't keep up in that way, but it is very heavy, and it really gets to grips with what is it like to be female in Sudanese or post-apocalyptic Sudan. Or sub-Saharan Africa, and it is, yeah, it's pretty horrific, and that's kind of like the setup of what the main character was up against, and also what the society and the civilization that this story is telling is up against, and what people need to be freed from in the future and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's genocide, slavery, rape, female circumcision or genital mutilation, and it goes on in that way. But the way that it's written is, I thought, really, really great. I mean, it's difficult to say exactly how you can read about all these different things and just go, well, this is fascinating and horrific, but in the same time as all this horrific stuff is going on, there's definitely, you know, a hope to the book, which is... which really kept me going through that kind of thing. That you just go, right, this can't be what the story is about. This is just setting the stakes of the book. This is just kind of describing what we're going up against with this book, and then it carries on. And there was a group of friends that forms with Onisowo, and with her three friends, who she goes through this rite of 11-year-old girls, who they all go through it and. Go through this ceremony where they get their clitorises removed, I guess. And it's just really even weird to even talk about this kind of stuff, because it's like, this is not the kind of thing that I've normally read about from a main character's perspective in a fantasy book. And I just, again, because I didn't know anything about this book except that I'd seen the cover and heard, you know, kind of noticed it in, you know, winning awards a few years ago or being nominated for awards a few years ago. I didn't know anything about it, and going into this was pretty heavy. There's a group of four friends. There's Onisowo, and then I made a note of the names, Diti, Luwu, and Binti. They kind of stay friends, and they make friends at school. I mean, they stay friends at school after this kind of thing, so Onisowo isn't the complete outcast anymore. She has sort of like a way in and a bit more human interaction with other people who aren't just her mother and her adopted father. And once that goes into it, there's some magical stuff comes in, but it becomes very clear that Onisowo has some different magical abilities. And then pretty much up until the exact halfway point of the book, it's Onisowo going, you know, learning magic stuff and trying to be accepted as a wizard who doesn't want to take her because she's a woman. And then because she's Iwa, or what I can't remember the name of the mixed race outcast child of rape. And so that continues on all the way through. And all the way through this, I was like, okay, this is really good. I'm really enjoying the writing. The characters are interesting. The stories are going, individually, they have different stories. But I was like, when is it going to really kick off? When am I going to understand what's going on here? What this book is going to be about? Because while I was enjoying it, I was thinking, oh, there isn't, you know, the plot hasn't kicked off yet. We're still just in magic school territory, and I don't really know what it's about in the wider world or what's really going on here. And in a way, I'm kind of annoyed that I was thinking that, because then as soon as they do go, right, now we have the quest and we're putting the team together and we're getting, you know, we're getting the four girls together and they're going off and the boyfriend and the other boyfriend is coming along, and then they go off and they head out into the wider world to Onizuka needs to confront her father, her biological father. That's the whole plan. That I'm going to go back to the West, and my biological father is leading these armies against the black people and the genocide, and we got to stop them. And I'm kind of the prophesied chosen one to do this. I've got the magic in my blood. I'm the one who's going to. And I was like, right, okay, great. This is what it goes like. But then. And then what happens is that I was really enjoying it up until then. It's like, now we have the quest. Let's go. And suddenly the book kind of ground to a halt. And I was just like, oh, this is now so tedious. Because it's just about a group of 20-year-old, young people with hormones running through them and all these different kind of things going on. And they just kind of head out into this wilderness. So for a few hours of the audiobook, I was like, wow, this is really dragging now. And it really did drag quite a lot. But then it picked up and more adventure stuff happens. And there's, you know, they visit different places which are more interesting. And they get to, you know, and they do what they want to do throughout it. I don't need to go too much into it. But that's kind of the structure of the book. But it really does pick up towards the end. And all the characters, like, oh, this character knew that character. Oh, and this makes more sense now. Oh, and this is, you know, all the different magic things are explained. And the different plots and the backstories are explained. And it goes through. And the ending of the book is really, really great. I really enjoyed the ending of the book. And again, I don't want to give too much away, but it was happening, you know, as it was happening, I was like, oh, this could go one of two ways. It could either go this way and it's going to have this kind of ending, or it's going to go that way and it's going to have this kind of ending. And I wasn't really sure which one I wanted the most. And then in the end, it kind of does both. And I was like, oh, great. Oh, this is way cleverer than not cleverer, but it was sort of like, in some ways, when at the end of the book, you're like, wait, that's cheating. They were going to do this, and then they did that. But in this way, it kind of got away with cheating me at the end. I was like, ah, actually, what you've explained up until this point, it makes sense that this can happen rather than that happening, or this can happen, and that can happen, and this can happen. So I was actually pretty impressed with how the ending of this book was handled. So except for that kind of boring and annoying lull in the middle, plot-wise and story-wise, I actually do really rate this quite highly. And together with the world building and the characters and stuff, I was very impressed with this book. There are a few things that I want to bring up, though. It's not that, like, these are not all negative points, but some of the characterizations I thought were fell a little bit flat. But again, it's nothing too bad. But some characters which I was expecting to go through the book and change in some ways, they kind of just stayed a bit too easy. And some of the relationships that happened were felt sometimes a little bit too, like, a bit too pat. It's like, oh, these two people meet, and of course, yes, this happens, and then this. And I was just like, but they didn't. It's like, so often they don't have to work for anything. But I guess that's what happens when magic is involved and people's destinies and prophecies are involved. People don't actually have to work hard. Like, once you introduced rule-breaking magic, it's sort of like, well, those rules don't always exist. For example, there is, as I said before, it starts off near the start of the book with this rite of 11, when an 11-year-old girl gets circumcised. And it's horrific when you're reading it, but a bit later I was reading this, and I suddenly realized, oh, Onisuo has the ability to heal people and to heal herself. And so she does heal herself, and she lifts this curse from her, and she gets her clitoris back, and then just has fantastic sex for the rest of the book. Which is fine, that's the way the story goes, and it's all magical, but it kind of took away from some of the horror at reading at the start of the book about an 11-year-old girl who, even though her mother says, no, you're not, this isn't going to happen to you, this is barbaric, and in the West we don't do this anymore because it's a barbaric ceremony. She decides, oh, I want to fit in around here, so I'm going to go through with this ceremony anyway, even though she didn't really know what a clitoris was or what she was giving up there. And then she read about it later in a book, and it was kind of heartbreaking to read a 13-year-old girl reading about what a clitoris was and realizing that she didn't have it anymore. And it was sort of like, oh, that was so powerful at that moment, that when later on she was like, and magically, I've I can have fantastic sex now because I've got my, you know, I magicked my clitoris back into existence. It felt, you know, sometimes some of those things, and that wasn't the only time it happened in the book, but when that kind of thing does happen, it was like, okay, that kind of, even though I had those, like, even though it was an interesting journey and a fascinating journey to go into, like, being in a first person point of view of a girl going through that when she's an 11-year-old post-apocalyptic Sudanese girl, it kind of, some of, you know, some of the things, some of the battles that the characters took was diminished by later magicking things back into existence, or magicking the story into ways that, you know, so I was like, oh, and I didn't need to do this. Oh, and I could just heal myself after going through this stuff. It wasn't always bad, but it was just the wrong side of the line for me to kind of just magic people's sacrifice out of existence, or just go, oh, and this happened, but it's okay. We'll just fix that. So yeah, but it was put in the book for a reason, and I understand the reason. Like I say, there has to be some hope going into these situations, and I did feel that at the time. But again, it sometimes things need to have permanence for them to have the same dramatic impact. Things later on in the book have to have permanence. You know, put it this way, things early in the book have to have permanence, so when you get to different things at the end of the book, you think they're actually going to mean something rather than not mean something. But the way the book does handle the end allayed all of those fears, like I said before. Yeah, another thing about the book, oh, let me actually just bring it up here. I've lost my notes here. What I was going to say here as well, that I do actually like I said before, the mixture of technology and magic, I think, is a very good there's a very good balance in this book. And I just wanted to contrast this. Well, not contrast, but I kind of note that I've just read previously The Broken Earth by, oh, let me quickly go back to Audible, and I'm going to look this up, The Obelisk Gate of the Broken Earth series by N.K. Jemisin. And I realize that I'm just now reviewing two books back to back, which are kind of post-apocalyptic fantasy books by black authors, and I think they're both from New York as well. Actually, I didn't really look up Nnedi Okorafor. Oh, it says here on it says she is an international award-winning novelist of African-based science fiction, fantasy, and magical realism for both children and adults. This is definitely one of the adults, adult books. She's born in the United States to two Nigerian immigrant parents, so maybe she's not from New York. She's an associate professor of Buffalo, New York. So I must have seen that in the book notes or something like that. So yeah, these are kind of back-to-back post-apocalyptic fantasy series with female characters growing up in and learning magic and fighting the bad guys or whatever, like that kind of thing. So it was just interesting to see these kind of two different takes on this. One is very, very obviously set much more in our world, and the Obelisk Gate and the other books in that series, what was it, The Fifth Season, seems to be set in a secondary world or a different world, or not quite Earth, or far enough in the future of Earth that it's kind of changed so much that it might as well be something else. But then you're still going, maybe they're on a different planet or something like that, I'm not quite sure. But yeah, it was just interesting to see the two of them reading these books pretty much back to back. What I found not so great in some cases was the narration. Oh, I'll do the Audible plug here. If you want this book, and I do suggest you read this book, you can't go too wrong going over to audibletrial.com/SFBRP, and you can get this book or The Fifth Season for free by signing up for a free trial for Audible, and by going to that link with the audibletrial.com/SFBRP, you help support the podcast here. I do want to say a quick note about the narration by Anne Flosnick, which overall I thought was okay. However, sometimes the accent, it felt a bit changeable. I don't know where Anne Flosnick is from, but it sounds like she's from England, because when she said the chapter number, so she would go, chapter 30, and it would be in this kind of very like received pronunciation English accent, and then she would go into the kind of, I don't know, sort of like sub-Saharan African accent to what she was doing throughout the rest of the book. And I kind of wish that she'd have kept that accent when she was saying chapter one and then not going, because I could tell it was the same narrator, but by switching backwards and forwards, I was always just thinking, is this accent correct? Is this accent, you know, like I say, it's a bit variable, but I mean, I don't mind that so much, but it just always took me out of it by saying, like, by switching accents as the narrator, kind of going out of the character, out of the first person narration character, to say chapter 12 and then going back into it as we go along. However, it is much, 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 much better narration than for the 100,000 Kingdoms by N.K. Jemisin. I can't remember the name of the narrator of that one. But that was awful, because it was somebody trying to put on too many different... accents of different characters and just failing. So it was okay, actually, of one narrator just sticking with one all the way through, one accent all the way through, because there is actually only one main character in this. So yeah, that's the end of it. audibletrial.com/sfbrp. I do suggest this book. Normally at this point I would talk about like the themes of the book, but I think I've kind of talked about them quite a bit. It's like, it's a very strongly, this is a story like about the things I was talking about. It's quite interesting to read what could have been a much more like frivolous fantasy story. It's like, oh, chosen one going to do this, but what is the chosen one saving the world from? Like, if it's just sort of like this, oh, the nefarious evil who is going to destroy the whole world, you're like, okay, that's worth doing. Oh, a thing with a ring and hordes of armies coming over and doing that, you're like, okay, that's a magical thing that you got to save for. Oh, there's, you know, this conspiracy of a thing with wizards underground or whatever these books are normally. Oh, okay, that's worth doing. Oh, zombie apocalypse. Yeah, okay, we can save the world from that. But when the world that you're being saved from is a world which kind of exists right now with genocides and ethnic cleansing and slavery and racism and massive amounts of misogyny and subjugation of women and rape and all of these different kind of things, if that's what you're battling about, I'm like, wow, this is kind of worth it. This is worth reading about the magical chosen one child magic school story if it's battling against something which is kind of like a real world problem. And it kind of makes me want to read more stories about, you know, magical prophecy childs going to magic school and training magic to solve real world problems. Maybe they don't always have to be genocide and rape and female genital mutilation and things like that. It doesn't always have to be that level. But how about like someone goes to magic school and learns how to, I mean, I guess some of these things have been done, but like go to magic school and then learn how to get really good at, you know, helping people with their tax returns. Or they go to magic school and get really good at, you know, helping people fix their computers and things. And these are always kind of like, okay, these are minor problems, but it would be great to have like some real problems that people go to magical school and save the world. Maybe climate change. Okay, so you go to magic school and you realize actually one of the biggest evils facing us today is maybe say, yeah, climate change and political corruption or political instability here and there, and then you use your magical powers to solve those kind of things. And sure, you can do it with magic battles and shape changing and all these different kind of things, but it would be nice to kind of see some more books in this mold where there's some real world problems, and it can be as fantasy as you want. You can solve it in as a magical way in fantasy as you want, but it felt interesting that the main magical threat, or the main threat that is being solved by the magical prophecy child going to magic school, isn't just generic bad guy with a bigger spell book or a ring or a whatever. So that's it. Anyway, I'm going to wrap this book up, and I'm going to give this book 4 stars out of 5 stars. I was very impressed by it. Of course, I mean, it won the World Fantasy Award and was, you know, Nebula Award nominated and all these other kind of things. Let me just go back over here and check out what other people think of Who Fears Death. I'm going to the Friends reviews. 29 friends have reviewed this, and they give it a 3.73 average. These are SFBRP listeners. Jenny from Reading Envy. I read this because it was one of the Nebula Award winners in 2010. Yeah, that's good. So, yeah, Jenny says here, the author doesn't shy away from really serious background issues like ethnic cleansing, genital mutilation, slavery. But the addition of the mystical turns it into a triumphant story. Yeah, it's pretty much my own thing of it. But I don't see these are, it says, shy away from really serious background issues. Like, if you open the book with that kind of stuff, it isn't a background issue. That is the issue. That is the issue that we're dealing with. It's certainly not background. Tudor, nothing can prepare you for this marvelous novel. Scott D rated it 4 stars. Nnedi Okorafor is known as a young adult author, but this is her first adult novel, and it's very adult with some very difficult, with some difficult rape scenes and violence. Yeah. Sandy rated it 4 stars. Yeah, so pretty good. Some rating. Ryan rated it 3 stars. Here's a lot longer review. I'm not going to have a look at that now. David, 3 stars. This is a post-apocalyptic novel set in Africa with lots of supernatural elements. A lot of interesting ideas, but I did not find this to be a quick read, and I wish it had flowed a bit more. Yeah, I think that's one of my main criticisms of this book, is that as I was reading it, it didn't feel quick, even though it's not too long, actually. As an Audible book, what is it? It's, doesn't say here. But I don't like it when Audible, once you finish the book, it doesn't tell you how long it is or how long you've got to go or something like that. But yeah, so maybe about 14, 15 hours of an audiobook. But like I say, that was that lull in the middle where I was like, oh man, it's like felt like 2 books. In fact, it could have been 2 books. I could have stopped after part one of the audiobook. And it would have been Onisuwu growing up in this kind of thing, turning 20, and then like, right, and now I'm going to head out into the world. And if she'd have head out into the world and the book would have ended there, I'd have been like, you know what? That was a really good book. That would have been a 4-star book just by itself. You know, girl, prophecy, or magic school, prophecy, that kind of thing, learns her craft, gets a mission, and heads out to do it. And that could have been a standalone novel for me. But then the second half of the book didn't really feel like it was picking up straight away. It was sort of like, and now some slog. Let's just do some slog in the middle here as well. Victoria rated it 5 stars. Liguan rated it 5 stars, and other people haven't commented and stuff like that. So, yeah, I would suggest reading this book as well. I'm probably going to go pretty much straight on to the next book that was recommended to me. Or, not, you know, I've got some other books to read as well. But Book of the Phoenix, Who Fears Death? And I'm not going to read the blurb about that because I know it's set beforehand. I'm thinking it's probably going to be maybe about the main characters in this book, maybe about her mother, because it says it's set beforehand. It's like a prequel, so I'm guessing it's gonna follow the story of her mother and stuff, because it's that she was a basic mysterious figure, because she was only, like, at the start of the book, she only has one role, and that is mother and rape victim. But as the book goes on, you're like, oh, there's actually some more interesting stuff going on in her past than you'd think just after reading the first half of the book. So otherwise, the next book that I'm going to be reviewing is probably We by Evgeny Zamyatin and stuff like that. I've got maybe 4 hours of that audiobook to go. And then after that, I couldn't get the Alistair Reynolds book Revenger via Audible. But Jesse from SFF Audio sent me a review copy that he got. So I'm gonna check that book out as well, after that being recommended to me so many times in the for good reasons and bad reasons in the SFBRP listener group, books I would like to see reviewed thread. So you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge on Twitter. Also, you can follow me on Instagram. I'm really getting into Instagram. I'm enjoying posting pictures and videos and things of my travels and my daily life there as well. So check me out on Instagram. I'm at Luke Burridge at Instagram, I think that's how you say it, or is it just / Luke Burridge? And also follow me on YouTube, because I'm starting to vlog now about my job and my travels and juggling and other things that are happening as well. So if you're kind of interested to see what I get up to as I do my work trips and things like that as a professional juggler, I think you might find that interesting. So check me out on YouTube. I'm also at Luke Burridge. No, that's was it youtube.com/something/ Luke Burridge. I'm sure you'll be able to find me on there if you just search for Luke Burridge. I'm Luke Burridge pretty much everywhere, except Skype. So that's it from me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.